Live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
The OJs, and that is prayer. So this is JJ Selection. So I know that you come from a praying home. Are you a praying man?
Absolutely. I am a praying man, and I'm surrounded by prayer warriors. My dad was a priest, Anglican church, retired priest. He's retired now, turning 86 this month. My mother was a school principal, and you know that they were very strict with prayer, even at that level. My wife is also a priest in her own church. So I don't know, there's nowhere to run. When I turn, there's prayer waiting. When I changed politics and went to Congress of the People in 2009, guess what happened? I was assigned to Bishop Dandala. They say, no, Wena, stop what you're doing. You're going to, when this guy wakes up, he must see you first. When he goes to bed, you must be the last person he sees. And that guy's a prophet. Bishop Dandala is a prophet. He prophesied even that Cope was going to lose. That's how much of a prophet he is. He one day just stood in front of business people and said, if Cope loses, it will be a blessing in disguise. I said, Reverend, how can you say that to people who are supposed to give us money? But I think he foresaw that it was going to be trouble, because even after we lost, Terra Logota still wanted to replace him and go to parliament, even if we lost. Imagine if we won. What was going to happen between Terra Logota and Bazima Shilowa? There's going to be blood. Literally. So it looks like I'm surrounded. When I left Cope, guess who was the first person to call me? Was the Archbishop of Cape Town. Hey, welcome home. How? Archbishop, yeah, when are we ordaining you as a priest?
Why were you joining Cope in the first place?
Well, we needed a change. You know, sometimes when you need a change, the instrument may not achieve that change. It may just achieve a message that change is needed. And I think it planted a seed. I mean, look how many parties we have now. Cope-like parties. Even somebody like Wanganeba formed a party called Shiluba, and it got no votes, and then now he's joined another party. So there's a need for a change. The issue of complacency, where you got the one party state type of situation, is unacceptable, and it can only lead to destruction. The destruction we've been listening to all evening. In other countries where, in fact, there's a one party state and not even a pretense of democracy, those places are in ruins. Some of the infrastructure that was last improved by the colonialists when they were there. It's like a Mangope situation there, where in the northwest, the last building that was new was built by Mangope. Because of a one-party state, you must avoid it at all costs. Right now, we're talking about the GNU, where 10 parties are pretending to govern together. And then you've got the opposition, what, MK and EFF, right? So people are saying, oh, no, this can't be a serious opposition. And so, okay, fine. Maybe you don't like their noise, but should you have silence instead? Or must you have some kind of a counter force, so that these ones who are complacent must at least do something different?
You had your time in government.
Yeah, of course, I enjoyed it. No, I did. That's why I started my career.
And so, with your experience in government, what did it teach you about what you're seeing now?
Actually, I was very shocked with some of my experiences. I was made a spokesperson of a minister. That was my first job. Worked for a very competent minister, Minister Vali Musa. He had a deputy called Mary Joyce Mabuda Fassi, and they didn't get along. So now when I see how deputy minister and minister, it doesn't surprise me, because they didn't pretend to be getting along. Right? This one is a minister, this one is a deputy minister, and they didn't see eye to eye. I think the minister didn't think this one knows anything. This one thought the minister undermines them, so they would always go to the president to say, please help me and whatever. When that happens, what do you think happens to the officials? What do you think happens to the to the service to the people? It suffers because the people have two big egos. Secondly, if you're talking about lessons, I got the type of things that I see happening, let's say in municipality, in terms of poor service delivery. When you now look back at the bureaucracy, you understand why it's happening. If you wrote a letter to the minister, right, you'll be lucky if you receive a response in 3 months. Mm. And that response, by the way, would be saying, we acknowledge receipt of your letter. Mm. Don't be answering your query. Mm. Right? Why is that happening? In government, there's something called a root form. Mm. In this root form, somebody, if the minister has to respond to you, mm. it must be signed by 10 people. Mm. I'm not joking. It will be signed by a DG, DDG, chief director, deputy director, assistant director. Mm. They must all sign that this letter is fine. Mm. If the assistant director writes a letter and the next person who's the deputy director doesn't like something that they will, instead of correcting it, mm. so that it can go to the next level, they send it back to say, there's a comma missing here, please put it here. Mm. Right? Then it comes back up the line. If the DDG doesn't like it, mm. he sends back to the chief director who sends it back down, and then maybe it gets to the director who's on leave for 3 weeks. And then he comes back and says, oh, they need a comma. All right. He put the comma. It
starts again.
I'm not joking. This is in real life. Right? It's a root form. I hope they've abandoned it because I've not been in government for a while now. But during our time, it was a big bugbear for those who wanted things done and done quickly. Mm. Right? For example, if I was a media liaison officer, there was a media query from Pimelo on Kaya saying, hey, what's happening? What's the minister saying? Ideally, I'll have to then send it to the DG. Mm. Remember, I'm not in a G, so I'm in the minister's office. Mm. Send you a DG who will send it to the DDG responsible, who will send it to the relevant chief director before I get an answer. Mm. So what did I have to do? I had to know who has the answer. Mm. Call that person and ask for the answer.
Directly.
And then say to the minister, listen, this is the answer. Mm. Forget about their root form while we answer. Mm. And that's why that department had a high profile, because we try to flatten the structure of service delivery. Same with the parliamentary questions. Same process. 10 people signing. It's bizarre. So that's you could only understand it if you worked there and you saw it. Otherwise, you'll think this can't be. This is a comedy. Mm. The third thing is, your good intentions don't always translate into service. So there's a report that goes to cabinet to be approved. I'm talking now in the context of where I work. Mm-hmm. This report is worked on by officials and so on. It goes to cabinet. The minister presents it there. The cabinet rejects it and says, this is badly written. Can it go back? Right? Mm-hmm. Imagine the process that it has followed. Mm-hmm. Now it must follow the same process going down, and people are blaming each other down the road. Okay. Then it comes, it's rejected to a second time. Mm-hmm. And then the minister then says to me, hey, can you take this report and rewrite it? Mm-hmm. I think it would be fine if you rewrote it. Mm-hmm. You are trying to tell me you didn't read this report, and it came to me with all these mistakes. Mm-hmm. Please fix it. Mm-hmm. So after a third version, you are waiting like the people at Giani for your water pipe, and their document to approve that expenditure, okay, is stuck in the system. Then finally, you ask me what lessons.
Yeah.
I worked for a parastatal at some point in my career. Mm-hmm. And for my sins, a new chief executive came, not long since I was appointed, and then made me in charge of airport security. Mm. Don't ask me what I know about airline security.
He's starting to sound like Pigle Mbalul after his stint as transport minister.
Yeah, I knew absolutely nothing.
As I know, I knew nothing.
Yeah. But in certain appointments in the public sector, right, it's all about leadership. What am I talking about? So my predecessor, right, who was in charge of airport security, when I talked to the team, so I said, obviously, if you are a new manager, say, well, tell me what's happening. What's happening? They say, no. This building actually is not compliant with labor laws. Mm. We could be expelled. We don't have an AP system to talk to all the staff to evacuate. Should there be a fire? Mm. I said, why? They said, no, well, the memo was written 3 months ago. It's sitting on your office. Mm. Remember, I'm a week old. I said, No. Your predecessor is sitting with a memo. Mm. This memo says this building must be compliant. We need a PA system to be able to evacuate people. It will cost 102,000 rands to install this system. It's a 6-story building, big airways park, it's called. Right? So now, that issue I'm telling you has got nothing to do with airport security or airline security. It has to do with leadership. Mm. Are you able as a leader to identify issues where you can intervene as a leader? So I go to my office, and check, I find it there indeed. It's at the pile of the in
many
the
other requests,
tray.
Yeah.
I sign it to say this is urgent. Can we have a compliance? Otherwise, the Department of Labor will close us. Mm. Now I learned that although government is restrictive, right, you are not going to solve it by a big bang theory where all officials are suddenly so efficient. You as a chief director of XYZ, what can you do to make things in your area of influence to actually work? Mm. Because if all of us did that, then most of the things will work, right? Without thinking that magically everybody will suddenly work well. So that was a lesson I had learned, at least in that SA experience, that even though I wasn't a specialist in airline security, the things that at that executive level you have to do, and this applies to ESCOM, Transnet, and so on, sometimes you have to do with leadership. You surround yourself with people cleverer than you, more qualified than you, and then you give them leadership to excel at what they're doing.
We'll take calls, 086-000-00959. JJ is my guest. He's with me until 10, actually. So you're very welcome to do that. Or you can also send voice note on 063-688-0959. So where does that song
take you? Listen, there used to be a campaign, and you're old enough to know, called Masakani.
Mm-hmm.
This was when I started my first job, and this was in the Department of Cooperative Governance.
Mm-hmm.
And it was talking, there was a so-called culture of non-payment. And so we had to, so I came across this campaign because I was placed in this office. And then I called these people who are an agency to think, what is this thing about Masakani? Can you talk to me about it? So we said to them, we need to recast it to talk about working together, pulling together as a country. It's and it's very relevant today. We talk about local government.
Yeah.
And the people at Swan, the action essays, they haven't heard the song Masakani, what it says. Part of what it says is that Sin Jane Tandas. It goes back to the prayer issue to say things are so bad now that we only have to look at divine intervention. So it's my theme song when I deal with issues of local government, intergovernmental relationships, things like that, and also us doing for ourselves what the politicians will never do for us.
Mm.
So we working together. Masakani, let's build together.
You have been a very strong voice in the media, but one of the moments that touched me the most is when you apologized to Phumla Williams, which I thought was quite big of you, actually. Why do you think that was important?
It was important because, you see, when I got to radio, I didn't try to be somebody I'm not. I didn't try to be Lawrence Dube or Lawrence Tlhabane.
Mm.
Right? I came there with my brand of communications, not even journalism.
Mm.
You know, people got confused, you know, they think that I'm a journalist. Actually, I'm not a journalist. Mm. I just happened to be blessed that somebody like Given Mukari said, oh, this guy writes well. Mm. I've known him for years. Mm. I think he can... You know, he just said, "Hey, Rabilolo, come on, go the movie red show in the evening." And I was puzzled, you know, because I hadn't spoken to the guy for 3 years for whatever reason. And then suddenly I must do this show.
Mm.
Now, on the show, I dealt with issues that are pertinent, like gender-based violence, corruption, etc., etc. So when the issues came, Phumla Williams came to lament at the state capture about how he was ill-treated by Mutambi.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in Mutambi's office at that time, right? I saw it as having been, in a sense...
Complicit
in oppressing her, right? Because, you know, when you're working in the minister's office, like even in my first job, you almost can use the minister's authority to get what you want in the department. You say, all you have to say is to minister says.
Mm.
So this person was the head of GCIS, but I was able to say, hey, minister says, because... I believed at that point, which I don't regret, that GCIS was a bloody mess and they didn't know what they were doing in terms of communicating properly for government. Mutambi, I didn't know from about so. I was, when she came onto the scene, I was actually at Brand South Africa as a consultant there. So I was almost absorbed into her office by default. But by being that proximal to her, right, you know, when she was oppressing, I didn't say to her, no, don't do that, because she was the minister. What I had to do was to implement what she wanted to happen at GCIS in particular. So when Phumla Williams said how it affected her, I felt that, you know, this is something that if I was aware of, I would not have been part of half of the things that we had to instruct her through the minister to do.
You strike me when you say you're not a journalist. But that journey sort of started quite early for you, though, at school, where you put together some sort of a magazine.
Absolutely. Or at 13 years old.
At Tsoho.
Yeah, at Tsoho High School.
At Tsoho High School.
We launched a magazine called Tsoha Tsoho. Wake Up Tsoho.
What were you trying to do there? What were you trying to achieve with that magazine?
I wish I could explain that because it's really years ago. But essentially, there wasn't a communication platform for students to converse. Mm. Secondly, I was part of something called Operation Feed the Hungry. Mm. And what we did with this was that we had to call on students to bring what we call commodities. So they can bring tin stuffs, candles, this, unperishable stuff. Mm. So we needed a platform where we could actually call on students to say, this is where we're going this week. We're going to that old age home or going to that Vescopis. There's a place called Vescopis there. We're going to drop off stuff, etc. So,
my
faint recollection, we needed it as a communication platform for something bigger we're doing to mobilize students. And you'd be shocked if you see where the students deposited this stuff that they learned about in the magazine and where we're going, who is going to benefit, and so you'll be amazed. Mm. And then we had what something called the Rotary Club, which was an elite thing. Mm-hmm. Only a few of us could belong to that. Mm-hmm. So we used that to also communicate what happens at the Rotary Club, etc., so that those who are not members but are in the school can also have access to some of the good things or the elite things that were happening at the Rotary Club in Pretoria.
So, talk to me about your time at TIFLUP, because I think you were quite involved, were you not? I mean, even with things that, like sport, that no one would believe now. You are a champion of table tennis, you are a runner.
Can you believe that? Yeah. Table tennis and athletics. Yeah. My wife loves it. I ran 100 like meters. And that sporting angle was destroyed by politics, interestingly. Mm. Because once I got involved in SRCs, all of that sporting disappeared. Then I was focused on politics, etc. Mm. But let me start from the beginning when you talk about TIFLUP. I went there by accident because I wanted to go to Medunsa, which is now called SMU University for some reason. then they say, no, your matric is not so good enough to be a doctor. Mm. Please go to TIFLUP and do something called BSc Pre-Medicine, which basically is the big four, chemistry, bio, science, maths. Mm. If you pass those, you can come back. We'll take you to second year medicine. Mm. I said, good shot, I'm going there. I'm going to crack it. Mm. Went there, I failed everything. Mm. I only passed something called Special English for Science Students. SPENG. You didn't even need to write exams. At least my dad said, at least you passed something. But you are not studying clearly. So we are going to take you to UNISA. So that... So I went to UNISA with my tail behind my legs to go and register BA, English, Setswana, Philosophy, Languages, or something like that. UNISA starts early. TIFLUP another start in February. So by second week of January I was already submitting assignments. I was trying to redeem my first year of university. Come first week of March, then the comrades realized, hey, this person is not here. No, this can't be. What's happening? No, I was a student. You rule one A19. Hopefully everything, you are expelled. But no, nothing like that. A fellow called Professor Matebula, I'm sure you should know him, Tlengani Matebula, got into a car with another comrade, came to negotiate with my parents to release me.
Really?
To go back to TIFLUP. They negotiated with me to go back there because they need me on campus. My father is very strict. I don't know how on earth Matebula convinced him to let me go. So that I said, no, we can let you go. But on condition you register the same things you registered at UNISA. No fancy chemistry, physics, and what.
Agreed.
Yeah. I said, no, agreed. Get to TIFLUP, register my BA. What did they do? If you are doing chemistry and maths, and suddenly you are doing English 1 and philosophy, and you're getting 80s and 90s, then you got time on your hands. Mm. What did that do? I joined the Anglican Society, young Christian students. That's what you're saying, playing table tennis, running, right? And then something else. I applied to be in the disciplinary committee of the SRC. Mm. This is my first year, remember. So when I get there, when I get to the first year now of the BA, I carry on with that for another 2 years. Mm. And that chowed a lot of my time. That's what interested me in law. Mm. So that when I finished that BA, which I consider to be my parents' degree, I gave it to them and said, I'm going to Cape Town now to do law in Cape Town. Mm. Right? So Tevlop was excited. It was a building phase. Right, and the only a formative phase. By the way, the disciplinary committee thing has to do with prefect system. Mm. Because at Tsoho High School, there was no SRC. Mm. There was prefect system. Mm. So when I go to Teflop and I realize the chaos, the drinking, the absolute chaos. So it is the prefect system, it's a university. And that disciplinary committee was taken very serious. Mm. I used to deliver summons myself to people who misbehaved. And then when they come to the hearing, they find me sitting there, but I'm clerk of the court. So Teflo was very interesting in that regard. In fact, I was just there last week to celebrate 65th anniversary of Teflo, to reflect with other former presidents, former vice presidents of SRCs through the years. I was vice president before I graduated there. Mm. Of the SRC after being involved in YCS and Anglican Society.
I want to take a quick break. When we come back, some more music, and we can also take your calls, and we can also listen to your voice notes on 0636880959. Okay, they will see you later, but you were singing and dancing to the music. Tell us about this.
Teddy Pendergrass, I mean, one of my old-time favorites. I mean, I couldn't choose. He gave me a long list.
Yeah.
I picked this one because it's very profound. Firstly, dedicated to my mother, because when she passed away, in fact, you just met me. I've always wanted an opportunity to tell people that when my mother passed away, I had just met you a month earlier, and you came to my home to wash dishes. My wife was astounded. You say, no, they don't make them like this anymore. How can this celebrity come there instead of sitting in a tent and being served? She washed dishes. Anyway, I thought I should tell people just in public how wonderful a person you are. Anyway, so my mother just
you answered me.
So on the day my mother passed away, the day before that, I had just went to take out Lobola for my wife, and she called me in the evening to say, did everything go well? I said, no, it went well, and so on. Then she said, we look forward to seeing you tomorrow night on TV. This was my first TV show, frankly speaking, on SABC.
Well. Yeah.
She passed away the following morning.
I remember.
And then there I am and say, I'm launching my, this is a big break.
It was a big moment for you.
Understand?
I remember that.
And I said, my mother said she'll see me on TV. Yes. She's going to see me. Mm. I'm going, I put on a black suit and celebrated her life. Mm. And went to dedicate that show, that TV show, my first TV show to her. Mm. And the rest is history. You can see what's happening with the TV career. There's no joke about it. It's a mission. It's a ministry. You can just hear me shouting there. It's a mission and a ministry. It's purposeful.
What is your why for that show, for the work that you do in the media?
It's exactly, it's a ministry. Let me tell you what happened. Mm. So as I was getting a call from Given Mukaru to say, come and do the radio show. I said, oh, this guy thinks I'm going to work for him. He should be crazy. And I said to him, I'll call you. I'm on my way to Ethiopia. I'll call you back when I return. So I'm going to Ethiopia to a conference called Africa Rise. Mm. It's a faith-based conference happening parallel to the United Nations Head of State's meeting. Guess what they are discussing there? Unbeknown to me, I'm sitting in a meeting where they are now discussing the role of faith people in the airwaves. That the faith people have left the airwaves to the world. Mm. And then they get surprised when the gospel message doesn't reach. So the apostle I was traveling with, Apostle Gobodo, who I've been telling how crazy it given is to think I'm coming away, she looked at me and said, there is your answer. That's how my... So when I came back, I didn't explain to Given what happened. I just said, I'll do it. He had not even given me an offer of the peanuts he was going to pay. Okay? I just agreed and I said, when are we starting? We're starting on the 2nd or 3rd of March. And that's it. So that my whole work has been about ministry. People have said, can you be a priest? No, I don't think so. Right? I will be on air and I will interrogate issues of society. Right? From gender-based violence to people dying of cholera in Haman's crowd, I will shout out those people, almost like Jesus whipped them out of his church. Mm. Until and I'll be quiet when I'm dead. And right now it's too late, because if you just take all the rants I've done since 2018 and now, they'll outlive me. And because things are so bad and they're not changing, you could pick up a rant I did in 2018 and just play it.
It's exactly the same.
And it will not be irrelevant. The only thing that will change will be the name. Instead of Zuma, you say Cyril.
I've got a voice note before I ask my next question.
Hi guys, thanks for the nice show. I just wanted to ask, JJ Lapo, I also went to study at TEF. I did communication and I did also a post grad in science communication, of which it was just introduced last year. So currently I'm doing my MBA, Masters of Business Administration. But just to advise me, actually, because now I'm currently looking for a job and it's difficult to even, you know, get a job, especially looking at my age. I'm 38 years old. What advice can he give me so that I can be able to look for opportunities where it's, you know, probably possible that I can get employment at this age?
First of all, if you're doing an MBA before you go and work, it may be a difficult MBA. So you should actually try harder to get the job with the qualifications that you have. And then the MBA will be easier when you are working, because actually in the MBA, you are doing case studies, mm-hmm. you are doing syndication work. Mm-hmm. And so you'll be blank if you actually are not able to refer to real life experiences. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. Secondly, I mean, I'm happy to have a look at his CV. Mm-hmm. He can inbox me on X, and we can take it from there.
You are an extremely charitable person. I don't think people know that. Is that a quality you got from your mother?
No, absolutely. My parents were community people. My dad arrived in a small village called Hebron, where you came to wash dishes, and built a church. And mobilize the community. There were two rand at the time to build a church that's still standing as we speak, right? My mother, as a principal, obviously was like a teacher of the whole community. Mm-hmm. So we've always understood that the needs of the other people also matter, right? And we stretch that. I mean, I over the years have taken many people to school. Some of them I don't even remember, mm-hmm. and I can tell you some of those were chosen randomly. Mm-hmm. Right, but I gave them one condition. I said, I'm sending you to school. When you graduate and you work, you send somebody else to school and give them the same condition. So I'm hoping that people have given money to go to school, remember that condition and not just throw in it. Some of them have disappeared, but I know that they succeeded, they're heads of this or that, heads of engineering, head of marketing, and so in their different places. All I'm praying for is that they don't break the chain. They take somebody else. Because how much is it? How much is a UNISA BA? Truly. I mean, you could sacrifice your John Walker blue or red for one weekend and you can send somebody to school for a whole year.
What's your next?
Well, Al Jazeera of Africa. That's the next big thing. And it's going to happen before I exit.
JJ Davane, thank you. It's always lovely seeing you. Thank you for gracing us with your presence. Thank you.
Thank you, Pima. Thank you for hosting me.
And if you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.